Joined now by the voice of the Browns, Jim Donovan. Jim, minicamp's underway. We got to watch a little bit of the drills being held earlier today. And I think the first thing that you notice is a very different coaching staff doing some things different ways, different looking drills involving medicine balls with defensive backs and towels with defensive backs. I mean, all kinds of different elements are introduced to it, but that's to be expected. And this is Rob Chudzinski's first kick at the can as a head coach leading a minicamp.
And I'm sure a big day for him. I'm sure it's a day he's waited for and probably rehearsed for. And when he interviewed, he probably had to explain, how do you run a practice, Rob? And he had to, I'm sure, look down at his notes, because guys that want to be coaches, they prepare for these kind of things, and they come in with huge notebooks to show to general managers and presidents and owners of teams, and they say, this is how I would do it. So it's playing out in front of him, and I think it's a big day for him. I'm excited for him. I know he's put a lot of time and a lot of dreaming time into making this come to reality. Lest anybody think, Vic, that this is not a football town. And I know we're on radio, but we need to paint the picture. The amount of cameras, still photographers, reporters, bloggers, writers, sportscasters, I mean, it numbers like opening day at a regular season game, if not a playoff game, practice getting ready for a big wild card playoff game on a Saturday, isn't it?
Undoubtedly. And it was an indoor practice. Yeah. I mean, it was held. It was pretty tight in terms of the setup.
Right.
And you're right. It didn't even feel that much like, there were clouds in the sky, so I guess it felt a little like football in that regard. But you're right, it was a big deal, and essentially a big deal for padless, non-contact, really non-football type of stuff, other than maybe throwing the ball around a few places.
Absolutely. And you mentioned these new practice methods, and it's always interesting to see how a new staff and how certain assistant coaches and coordinators come in and what they do that is different from what we've seen done here in the past. And there's always something unique, and there's always an explanation for it. So it's fun to watch that, but it's just great to see the orange helmets back out on the field.
It is, and I think that's the biggest thing. And you heard Rob Chudzinski talk about this yesterday. He talked about it on this show, that the back to that point of wanting players who want to be Cleveland Browns and who are proud to be Cleveland Browns out there and kind of getting this whole level of engagement, clean slate. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about the past. You're being judged on what you do going forward. And that makes sense, considering, again, that this is a new staff. The vast majority of these coaches have not worked with these players, the players that are incumbents. So they're getting to know them on the fly, and those players are getting to know the coaches. And I think as much as anything else, this is the relationship building process.
Yeah, and how quickly this all comes together will tell you how successful probably training camp is going to go. I think this is the next big mile marker, is to get to training camp in the practice part of things. Now, the other amazing thing about this whole situation on this new NFL calendar, because of the new CBA and everything, and the new rules about practice and how many you can have and when you can have them, is this. I mean, we are just about a week away from getting, you know, a first-round draft choice in here, and then a weekend, that full weekend of getting a whole stock, and we'll get the rookie class more defined. So really, things have become very compressed. There's a lot of work to get done here in a short amount of time before, you know, we're out on the steamy practice fields in July, and, you know, you're marking days down to see how many days until the opener.
That's true. I think some of the things that jump out at me, let's start with Josh Gordon. He is a different looking athlete now. He is so solidly put together. You could see, I mean, he's a big guy and a decent looking athlete last year, but he came in really with no football shape at all.
Right.
Now you could see he's gone through conditioning. You could see how well defined he is physically. And while it's hard to judge, and we didn't watch every single movement of him in a workout that had a lot of people involved, you know that he knows more about what he's doing. He's been involved in the classroom aspect of it. He's preparing to be prepared for a season. Last year, none of that preparation. He was thrown in cold, and you saw it. You saw the wrong routes he ran in practice. You saw the frustration of Pat Shurmur and the other coaches when he really didn't know what he was doing. He'd stop in the middle of a route. I don't see any of that happening with Josh Gordon now.
No, it's a job for him right now, and he looks very prepared for it this year. At this time last year, I mean, it was decision time for him. I mean, he had probably come to grips with the fact that he wanted to come into the NFL, but I don't think he really knew how to do it.
Right. Right.
I mean, he had been separated. He hadn't played football at Utah. And, of course, things had happened at Baylor that had kept him off the playing field and practice field for an awful lot of time, too. So there really was, Vic. I remember one time that Pat Shurmur kept him in a preseason game last year when everybody was out. And he was in there, and he had gone all the way. And he was just totally winded because you're right. Football shape is much different than being able to go out and run the 40, you know, in four something. It really is.
Yeah, and Norv Turner, as offensive coordinator, runs his receivers. I mean, one of the signature things of Turner's offense and practices is receivers are going to run long routes. They're going to be long developing routes, and he's known for pushing guys very hard. He did it under the hot sun in San Diego and in places like Miami where he's been as a coach. And that's kind of his trademark. Yeah. So he will, Josh Gordon and the other receivers will get their work. They've got to be in shape to handle it. And I think, again, looking at a Greg Little also in this mix, that the focus of these workouts is going to be for these coaches. What do we have? How hard can we – how far can we push them? They're going to be pushed hard, but how far will they go and how well will they respond?
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought Little had really a good year last year. And you can kind of look at a Josh Gordon and say, well, you can expect – what you got from Little last year, probably from Gordon this year, and probably even a little bit better because I think Gordon probably has a little bit more natural flow to his game. But remember, Little lost that final year of his college season, you know, at North Carolina and really had to get in the same process, get in football shape when he arrived. And the other thing, there's a lot of pressure on a guy like a Little, and certainly Gordon coming into this year, because everybody gets so consumed in the draft, and what do you have in the draft? And there is still that void, at least now, in that second round that is there because the Browns ante up last year, and in the supplemental draft, Josh Gordon represents a very bold move by then GM Tom Hecker to make that move and get Josh Gordon. And, you know, sometimes people will say, gosh, I hope he's good enough. You know, I hope he excels to the point where he is really worth us not having a pick in the second round this year. Now, that could change. Right. I mean, things could be done. But I think Gordon is the type of player I think that really probably has got tremendous upside.
Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, beginning the first of 3 days of minicamp. And so much more to talk about as well with regard to the kicking game. So the Browns add now Shane Graham, and they bring in a guy who has some experience, extensive experience in the league. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be handed the job,
right,
but he's got that history, and I think it's a good thing now with Brandon Bogate as a young kicker to now have Graham in there to push each other, if nothing else. I mean, they still may go with the younger guy. Kicking, you don't know, right? It's a performance-based thing. But on the brief amount of kick work we saw, and trying to do so indoors is difficult. I mean, looked like the ball was almost blasting through a wall and threatening to go through the wall. So that's a good sign by both kickers.
Well, I know there's a lot of construction going over there in the facility, but I didn't think they wanted that.
Added to the demolition.
You know, Browns fans remember this. Graham had a tough day one time at Browns Stadium in an early season game against the Browns. But there's a big but here. The problem was that day, they had a bad snapper that day. Brad St. Louis all of a sudden came unglued, kind of what happened to Pontbriand in the following year with the Browns, and he sailed a couple of snaps that were high, and Sean Rogers ended up getting his hand on a couple of kicks. But it wasn't because of Graham. It was because of bad snaps that day. And the other thing was he did come back in overtime and beat the Browns on that same afternoon. He's kicked outside. He kicked in Cincinnati, kicked around water. There's a river running on the outside of that building. There's a lake by it here. You know, he's got experience. So I think that probably, and I don't mean to be cute here, but that gives him a leg up on this situation, but we'll see what happens. That's a very, very pressure-packed position because of the guy that did it so well for so many years.
Oh, no doubt about that. And I get the feeling, just talking with folks on the coaching staff, that they're going to be open-minded about this, and they have to be, and that they're going to treat this like an ongoing competition. I don't know if we're going to know early on who this guy's going to be.
Vic, let me ask you a question. Are the Browns at any kind of position that if Graham is not the big kickoff guy, and kickoffs, I guess, really being important now, would the Browns consider themselves plentiful enough on the other side of the roster that they could keep a kickoff specialist and a long field goal type guy here? If Graham is not – Graham was like 4 for 9, I think, last year, kicking a pretty good – conditions down at Houston from 50 and beyond. I mean, could they – some teams do that.
Oh, yeah. I'm inclined to think they'd be open to do that.
You think so?
I really do. Just knowing Chris Tabor, just knowing his mindset. Now, obviously, it isn't his final call.
Sure.
And that's going to be something that Rob Chudzinski would have to believe in. But I do think Chris – first of all, is well-respected in what he does. I've had conversations with him through the last couple of years about just his philosophy on that. And he said, look, if you have a guy who's got that big leg, that who isn't your place kicker,
right,
then you could conceivably have someone else handle kickoffs and have the other guy just focus on place kick.
Yeah.
So it's conceivable. And I think here's the other thing. Mm-hmm. With a Bogaté, with a guy that young,
right,
you might want
sure
all of that focus to be on that if he ends up being the guy that you want to keep as your place kicker.
Yeah. Initially, that's how Billy Cundiff really got into the league as a kickoff guy.
Right, right.
For Matt Stover, I believe, at one point, who had lost length on his kickoffs but still was deadly accurate from 40, 45 and in for the Ravens. And Cundiff got his first real on-the-job experience kicking off, and then they would let him do the 50s, 55-yard field goals at the end of a half. So, you know, it's something to think of.
It is. Speaking of something to think of, this has been a difficult, last 24 hours or so. We know what the situation at the Boston Marathon. You're from Milton, Mass.
Yes.
You grew up all involved in that event through the years. You know what it means to Boston. You know what Patriots Day is all about. And I'm just curious, knowing you and knowing you have relatives and folks back in New England who were part of this, just your thoughts and reflection on what took place yesterday.
Well, I have to tell you, I mean, Patriots Day to me brings a smile to my face, but a different situation today. But for so many years growing up, Vic, I mean, I went, you know, everybody tasted the tradition by going to Fenway Park in the morning for an 11 o'clock Red Sox start and then going out and watching the Boston Marathon. I can remember one time being out in the bleachers at Fenway and the Red Sox were playing the Yankees in the morning, and it was, I mean, that was enough, right? And, you know, all of a sudden the whispers came through the bleacher crowd that there was a local guy winning the Boston Marathon. So we all ran out to Kenmore Square to see Bill Rogers, a substitute teacher in the Newton school system, but hailing from Boston College, running in a BC sweatshirt, or T-shirt rather, and winning the Boston Marathon. And, of course, really made his career as a professional runner. I have a sister who works in the health system in Boston, works at the Shriners Hospital, which was connected and is connected to Mass General, which was the pinnacle place yesterday. Mm-hmm. And she described an incredible scene. I mean, she was there. I mean, it was all hands on deck. There are 6-7 hospitals right in the Boston city proper.
Sure.
She said it was just something that she would never want to see again and could really not describe.
And you thought, I guess we're at a point now, and I don't want to say we're getting hardened by this stuff, but unfortunately the unthinkable stuff is happening far too often. But when it connects to an event like that, you and I spend a pretty good portion of our lives around sporting events, major sporting events, and you just start to become more conscious of that.
Right.
I guess I haven't been to a Super Bowl really since the Gulf War, since Super Bowl 25, Bills
I
and
was
Giants.
I was at that one. Yeah.
I was covering the Bills in that game. And I really, from everyone every Super Bowl since, there's always been that different sense of security and wondering if you're in a dangerous place.
Well, absolutely, and I can remember the NFL and the whole world, but certainly the NFL being paralyzed by what happened in 9/11, and coming to the Cleveland Browns because Lou Merletti was here and Al Lerner was a big part of national security and took it very serious, and really, you know, seeking opinions and advice from the great security crew that the Browns had put together on how do we restart the game, how do we make people come back to the stadium and feel safe, and that was an incredible day. And I don't know where you were that day, but I mean, the Browns were home when they finally restarted, and I think they were taking on the Detroit Lions that day, and it was amazing. Now, in many ways, and I know, you know, the Celtics back in Boston have canceled their game tonight, but they are expecting record television ratings for tonight's game between the Red Sox and Indians, played here in Cleveland, because they feel people back there need that, you know, take their mind off it, maybe for 3 hours,
right,
and watch the Red Sox. And, of course, the Red Sox are so precious to them back there. And if you remember what the Yankees were able to do post 9/11 in those months and go to the World Series and really kind of just take people's minds off of what was going on down at Ground Zero, it's an amazing thing. Sports serves as a great medicine, but you're right. I mean, it is a wide-open spot, and you wonder about it. We had a terror expert on last night, and we've had him on now after Sandy Hook, right, and now this. And I said to the gentleman, you know what? We're having you on too much. Yeah. You know, you're on with us too frequently now because this is happening so much.
But I think the point you make about trying to take people's collective mind off of this,
right,
and onto something else is, I guess, is the only way, at least for me, that I'm kind of pushing through on this, because doing the show last night and even doing it today, you feel there, right, there is that sense of, are we doing the right thing and talking about football and sport, all things that now seem trivial,
right,
in with that as a backdrop. But it does, they do say life goes on, and, yeah, and I think we hopefully do serve that purpose.
Vic, so, what a hero Joe Andruzzi, former Browns offensive lineman, yeah, and great Patriots offensive lineman before that on Super Bowl championship teams. But we were able to get a picture of him last night, you know, carrying victims out. And Joe's a cancer survivor,
right,
but one of the all-time great teammates. Wherever Joe Andruzzi played, his teammates loved him. And what a guy. What a, yeah, family guy. And what a hero to, you know, and he was out at the Boston Marathon because he's organized a group of people who run to raise funds,
right,
for cancer research.
And his brothers, New York City firemen.
That's right, yeah.
Who were part of 9/11.
Absolutely.
All survived. And,
yeah,
well, Jim, thank you. And we will do this again next week.
Great to be with you, Vic.
He is Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We've got much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.